This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Incumbent U.S. Congressman Peter Welch has two challengers in the Democratic primary this election season. We're talking with one of them today as part of our series of candidate interviews in the run-up to this year's primary and general elections. Ben Mitchell of Westminster West joins us now. He's a longtime educator and self-identified Democratic socialist. He's made other runs for state and national office in the past as a Liberty Union candidate. This is the first time he's seeking a Democratic Party nomination. Ben Mitchell, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Well, thank you, Jane. It's nice to see you again.
As I mentioned, you have run for elected office before. You ran for governor in 2010 and lieutenant governor in 2012. In both of those races, you ran on the Liberty Union ticket. Why are you running as a Democrat this year?
Well, and I also entered the United States Senate Republican primary in 2004 as an anti-war socialist. So I have entered a major party primary before. This year, I'm a democratic socialist, but I think this year the real emphasis is on democracy. I mean, in some ways, I'm here to try to defend democracy. I see some challenges. So maybe just to give a sort of prepared remark, if you look at Article 1, Section 8 of U.S. Constitution, it says that Congress may lay and collect taxes to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. And I believe this idea of general welfare is under attack, and it's been under attack for a long time. You know, what we do is, as a democracy, we elect representatives. We pool our resources to protect us from, you know, whether it's, you know, foreign invaders or terrorists or people who want to poison our water or poison our food or sell, you know, dangerous things to our children. That's why we collect taxes, and that's what, to protect the general welfare. But I feel that right now on a growing level, this has been true for a long time, but more and more our representatives are passing laws that protect the criminals themselves from the people, you know, whether it's the tobacco industry falsifying information or the opiate industry falsifying information. We have a political system that protects the perpetrators against the people themselves.
If you were to win, though, if your goal is, it sounds like, kick them all out.
Well, no, that's not necessarily
but
true.
But how could you, if you're one person,
yes,
how do you get to Washington and then change that system from the inside with your values if that's not the – if those values that you're saying – are not then, you know, if it's not a sort of a sweep of people into Congress?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously I'm a democratic socialist. So I'm looking at intermittent long-term change, right? 14 years ago, I was advocating the legalization of marijuana and everyone thought I was crazy and outlandish for saying that on C-SPAN. And now a Republican governor signed it into law under Libertarian. So things do change over time. Eugene Debs brought up a lot of ideas like Social Security and Medicare. And everyone thought he was crazy, but he got 30% of the population to be interested in it. And suddenly we had the New Deal. So by bringing these discussions to life, we open up new possible discussions that can happen in the political realm that right now are just out of question.
So does that mean you don't think you're going to win? You're here for the conversation and to elevate and illuminate these ideas?
Well, my opponent has over $2 million and he's getting, you know, whatever, $200,000 a term from corporate contributions. So it's unlikely that most people will even hear of me. But that doesn't matter. I mean, I've been a democratic socialist for a long time. The goal is to keep raising these discussions. So for particularly in terms of three sort of ideas that I think would sort of capture the kind of change that I want to see. Basically, I feel that the free market capitalism idea has really replaced democracy and replaced so much of our discussion. They believe that any problem will be solved by the invisible hand of the free market capitalist system. But most of the problems we face right now are really caused by that need for profit, by the free market capitalist. And we really need to start investing in public ownership as a counterbalance to this insane drive for more and more and more profit, consolidating wealth into fewer and fewer hands. So three quick proposals that would not challenge anyone directly. We're not going to, you know, we're not nationalizing the oil fields or whatever. I'm saying, so three things I would want to see are, first, public power. I've been talking about this for a long time. We need solar panels on every public building, every school, every town hall, every college, the public ownership there, rather than spending money in taxes to the school to then give to Green Mountain Power for whatever the market will bear, that the school itself would own electricity and be sending it back or trading carbon credits or however that works out. Public ownership of core resources. Another one would be, I think that all of the all of the – we need to set up so that all of the United States Post Office has banking ability so that you can go to the post office and get – open an account, get an ATM card and have it – because the post office has proven that they can run an efficient service that provides us all with something we need, and they're not in it for the profit motive. They're in it to provide a service, but they do it. They keep it in the black, and they manage their things really well, which the banks have proven they're not able to do. The savings and loan crisis, the dot-com bubble, the subprime bubble. We keep having these huge bubbles that they create, and then we taxpayers have to pay that off.
I know you've only done two and you have three, but why not tackle these at a state level where you have the possibility of perhaps getting more traction, you know, when we talk about resources.
All right, so here's a good example. Like Medicare for All is my third one. You know, we need to have a public option, which was eliminated from the Affordable Care Act by the, you know, lobbyists and Scott Brown, who drives a truck and all of that. It was eliminated, but that then made it impossible for Peter Shumlin to follow through with his plan to do universal health care, because he had to choose between following through with the plan that he knew was right or giving up the Medicaid expansion, which my children use. I've used it. You know, being in the field of education, I'm always at risk of being unemployed. They cut our programs constantly. I'm losing my job this summer because of, you know, New Hampshire Department of Labor is over budget or whatever, and they're laying everybody off. And that's so anyway, so whatever decisions are made on the federal level totally preempt whatever happens on the – especially around this, because there's such a – so, you know, we've lived through 100 years of propaganda against the idea of public ownership. In the 50s, my grandmother was a postmaster of Marlboro, Vermont, and she was blacklisted as a communist, so she lost her job. And this is part of this effort to make sure that public ownership is a dirty word. This idea of the general welfare enshrined in the Constitution before even the First Amendment has just been attacked savagely. I went off on a tangent. But yeah, so that's the third thing. I think those three things, by providing the public option as a choice instead of buying these insurance companies that are going to squeeze as much profit out of you as they can, having banking through the post office, and having public investment and publicly owned energy production that's clean, this will start creating a more stable base of for the standard of living. The fact is that people of Vermont have been squeezed too hard. I'm spending, you know, all this money on my electric bill every month, my telecommunications bills, energy bills, you know, oil, all of that. And I'm also paying taxes, and all this money is going out, and we're so in favor of private profit. Everything has to go into private profit, that all that money is just going and being sucked up by billionaires who are stuffing into their pockets, taking it overseas. It's time that the people of Vermont have been squeezed enough. It's hard enough to get from paycheck to paycheck. And then when my transmission goes or my furnace goes, then where do I go? I have no choice but to go borrow money from some corporation.
But you also said your taxes are going up, and so if you're
No, I'm not against paying taxes. I think we have a civil responsibility. It's part of that general welfare. I have no problem paying taxes, but I'm paying all this money, but I'm getting nothing in return. It's all going into these private-public partnerships. So rather than investing in something to help the taxpayer, to help the people, to support the general welfare, it's all going to the profit of individual people who can then buy the politicians.
Ben, let me ask you one other question, because you know, if you're a U.S. congressman, you obviously have to deal with other issues as well.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And certainly one of the ones that's front of mind for so many people right now is immigration. And right now the U.S. Congress is scrambling to address this question of children being taken from their parents when they cross the border.
The idea of child internment camps.
So what would you do?
Can you believe we're talking about this? Well, first of all, and this is another big point that I want to clarify, which is a distinction between myself and my opponent, is that I would advocate every day on the House of Representatives floor for the impeachment of Donald Trump. I think when you drive wedges into the existing cracks in society in order to destabilize and turn a population against itself to take power over it, that's not political theater. That's an act of war. And I think starting off just hyping up xenophobia and the whole process that he's going through is incredibly dangerous. People I know who survived World War II are trembling. They're having post-traumatic stress because they see the way he's using the cracks in society to gain power and completely ignoring the rule of law. Now, Peter Welch
So it's clear you would support articles of impeachment. But what about immigration policy formed by Congress? What would you do?
Well, personally, I would be in favor of a clear immigration policy with strong elements for sanctuary, strong elements for workers being able to come here, because we need workers. If you ask around, they say the economy is so good, there aren't a lot of jobs that pay a living wage and that can, give you health insurance and can actually make it possible to survive from paycheck to paycheck.
Would you support a $15 minimum wage?
Federal? Absolutely, yes. I'm certainly on a populist side of the left wing. But the larger issue, I think separating families, that needs to end. That's unconscionable, and I'm horrified. But if you look at Peter Welch's approach to the impeachment issue, he comes from the corporate Democratic view that we don't want to use the political capital of the Democratic Party to get tangled up in the weeds of impeachment. But this is we're defending democracy. It's the rule of law. It's equal protection under the law. This is the time to be brave, and this is the time to stand up.
And that's why Ben Mitchell thinks you should vote for him. He's from Westminster West. He's running for U.S. House. He faces Dan Frylich and incumbent Peter Welch in the Democratic primary in August. Vermont Edition will be interviewing both of those candidates in the coming weeks. Ben, I really thank you for your time today.
Well,
I appreciate talking with you.
I really appreciate it. It's nice to see you again.